Today, we're talking about Hurricane Frances and its ongoing scouring of the state of Florida. If you live there, if you're coping with the after effects of the storm, if you're still bearing the brunt of it, even if you're still bracing for its arrival, we want to hear from you. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Florida Lieutenant Governor Tony Jennings, who's with us on the phone from Tallahassee. Thanks very much for being with us.
It's great to be there, and thank you for allowing us an opportunity to sort of share some things with your listeners, especially those who are still in the state or those who have evacuated from the state, because we do have a message. Please stay where you are for at least another day. This storm is moving its way through the state. I don't think we've ever... Well, they did say in 1947 we had a storm that completely enveloped the whole state, much like this one did. But it's been a long time since we've had that. And while southeast Florida is starting to clean up, northwest Florida is still bearing the brunt of it. And we here in Tallahassee at the Emergency Operations Center have rain and winds, and they're going to get stronger as the day goes on.
Now, we saw it cross from east to west across Florida, but it's such a huge storm, a lot of it is still over central and northern Florida.
Absolutely, and that's, you know, the natural tendency, especially if you have evacuated, is to want to come back. And that's why we're asking people to please continue to stay off the roads. Many came to North Florida to get away from central and the coastal areas, and many went on into Georgia. This storm is headed your way, so we sure don't want you out on the roads when this storm continues to move through. We're not through with it yet. South Florida, southeast Florida, Palm Beach, Indian River, Martin counties are starting their cleanup as we speak, but central Florida is still experiencing tornadoes. We have had 21 reported tornadoes on the backside of the storm, which is not necessarily unusual, but it's a higher incident than we would have hoped. So safety is really our primary concern right now. We are mobilizing our relief efforts to be in place when people get back to their homes or for those areas that can clean up. And, of course, our wonderful partners at FEMA and the American Red Cross and the Salvation Army have just done yeoman's jobs because, of course, they were all here just 2 weeks ago and have not even left the state as a result of Charlie, the first hurricane to hit us.
And Bonnie, before that, just a tropical storm, but nothing to sneeze at either. Now you've got Ivan bearing down on you. You've had shortages in many parts of the states of gasoline and food. Are those being alleviated?
Well, we're working on those, and, you know, we've just had about as much of Mother Nature's love as we can stand here. So around here, if you talk about the next hurricane, we fine you $5. but the resources, yes, we are working right now. The Port Everglades is open with tankers in it that are offloading fuel. The fuel is being escorted back out to the distribution centers by the Highway Patrol. And what has really happened in many areas, there's gasoline there. It's just that the electric utility that's needed to pump the gas at the gas pumps is not yet hooked up. So we obviously have a prioritization to make sure that we have gasoline to those first responders and to the emergency operations centers. And then we've got the power people coming behind us to make sure that they're hooking up power so that we can pump at the retail establishment so people can get around. That's another reason we're really asking people who have evacuated to give it another day before they try to return home. If you don't have a full tank of gas that'll get you where you need to go, chances are when you run out, you will not be someplace where there is a readily supply of gasoline. So it's here. We have it available. We just have to make sure we get it to the right spots and that we have the electric power that we need to pump it when we get it there.
Thank you very much. And good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Florida Lieutenant Governor Tony Jennings joined us by phone from Tallahassee. And we want to hear your stories from Florida, 800-989-8255. Email is totn@npr.org. Annie is on the line with us from Fort Lauderdale. Hello, Annie. Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Sorry, I have a cell phone that goes out sometimes. Yeah, I just wanted to say that here in Fort Lauderdale, I was just listening to the previous caller, and gas has been a problem. Ice has been a huge problem. My husband and I just got our power back after 3 days, and the last couple of days we've been out looking for ice and haven't found any. And so it's just been crazy. It's sort of post-apocalyptic down here.
let's hope not that. But what was the most surprising thing to you? Was it the wind? Was it the water?
Well, you know, as a native Oregonian, having just gone through my first hurricane, it was the waiting. It was the hurry up and wait. My husband got our windows all boarded up on Thursday, and so we were living in a cave for 3 days and just waiting for it to hit, and then it didn't really hit here in Fort Lauderdale. It was more just like a storm, nothing really big.
Oh, well, don't be disappointed.
Oh, I'm not. Don't you be.
Thanks very much, Annie. Good luck.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Joining us now is Janet Zinnick, a reporter for the St. Petersburg Times. She's reporting on a situation, on a spill that sent 40 million gallons of wastewater into Tampa Bay. And Janet Zinnick, how did this happen?
Well, officials at Cargill Crop Nutrition are saying that the wave action that occurred in their retention pond during Hurricane Frances caused a 60-foot break in the side of a dike that holds 150 million gallons of this wastewater.
And I gather, Janet Zinnick, this is not the first time it's happened.
No, it's at this facility back in 1988, they dumped 45,000 gallons of untreated water into a nearby river that led into the bay, and they ended up having to pay millions of dollars in fines and doing a lot of environmental cleanup projects after that. And back in 1997, there was another plant here that dumped 50 million gallons of untreated water into a river that ended up killing millions of fish, and we're still recovering from that.
So this is the third time. You would assume that, third time's the charm, I guess, but I mean, are there repairs can be made to prevent this from happening in the future?
Well, they were talking today about trying to take some steps to make sure it doesn't happen again. They didn't have any good answers about why they weren't prepared for this. They knew there was a possibility that it would happen. When they saw that the storm was coming through over the past couple of weeks, they were trying to reinforce the dike in anticipation of this, but they just weren't ready. And more troublesome, I think, is that they have a neutralizing agent that they can mix with this water before they release it, and they didn't have nearly enough of that to treat all the water.
So preparations may have been lacking, even though this hurricane, as we mentioned, just crawled towards Florida the last couple of days. Anyway, Janet Zinnick, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Janet Zinnick is a reporter for the St. Petersburg Times. She was with us by phone from her office in Tampa. Carrie joins us now on the line from Jacksonville.
Hi there, this is Carrie. We've had a really rough time. We've just recently bought a wonderful new home here in Jacksonville, and we weren't supposed to be hit by our wonderful hurricane, but it came on full force. We did receive the east side of it. We have 5 windows, brand new $300,000 home pouring in water.
Ugh.
We can't, of course, get a hold of the builder because it's Labor Day. But here we sit with the water, no electricity. We've been over 24 hours without electricity and no phone service. I'm on a cell phone, as you can tell, I'm sure. We're really stuck here, and they're talking about at least another 24 hours in many parts of Jacksonville without any electricity.
There are millions of people throughout the state without any electricity.
Correct.
This is also after the biggest evacuation, what may have been the biggest in the country's history.
From what I understand, it is. And if you could have seen 3 days and 4 days ago, I-95 going north, you would have thought there were ants on it all scurrying to their anthill. There were hundreds of thousands of cars evacuating from the state of Florida. But we were supposed to be safe in Jacksonville. It wasn't coming here. Well, guess what? We've gotten hit by the one side, and now as it's out over the Gulf, it's supposed to come back in and hit us from the other side.
And we remember hearing similar things about some of the people who had to deal with Charlie. Hey, it wasn't supposed to hit our town.
There you go. And now we have, Ivan following right up behind.
Carrie, thanks very much. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We're talking about the aftermath, if you will, of the Florida Hurricane Frances. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This weekend, many across the country tracked the hurricane's progress on television. Frequent updates from reporters on the scene. Reporting from the eye of the storm is nothing new, but the assignment is still a dangerous one. Al Tompkins is the broadcast group leader at the Poynter Institute, a school for journalists in St. Petersburg, Florida, and he joins us now on the phone from St. Petersburg. Thanks for being with us.
You bet. You can tell that there is progress when the 24-hour coverage that has been going on television finally is taking commercial breaks. The CBS television station in Tampa has gone to the tennis tournament, and I just took the first steel windows off my house in the last 10 minutes.
Well, it seems that TV reporters get it the worst because the meteorologists can all sit there at their desk with their storm trackers and their grease pencils following the path of the storm. But somebody, to dramatize it, I guess, has to stand out there and lean into the wind.
I don't know that it's all that just dramatizing it, although I suppose there's an element of that to it. But you can imagine for the millions who have been evacuated, they want to know what's going on. I was evacuated 2 weeks ago with Charlie, and I found it useful, actually, to see the reporters, especially down in Port Charlotte, to see the storm surge, because that's what we wanted to see. We wanted to know how big the storm surge was, because it was, for that storm at least, it was the surge that we feared most.
How has reporting evolved since, say, well, Andrew was the, I guess, the benchmark that everybody uses?
Well, it is certainly the benchmark. But, you know, there are reporters who have certainly made their name in storm coverage. One of them was named Dan Rather. After Rather went live, golly, when was that? In the early 60s, I guess it was.
Mm-hmm.
So storm coverage has always been an important part of a television reporter's duty, especially if you live in one of those, you know, coastal communities. After Andrew, though, it seems to me, especially here in Florida, after Andrew, people got a lot more serious. You know, before Andrew, it wasn't anything down here in Florida for people to have hurricane parties and generally sort of make light of things, and it was sort of macho and tough to ride it out. Now it's just dumb. And people don't joke about it anymore. When there's an evacuation order, people take it pretty darn seriously. In fact, there was just an evacuation order on TV just a few minutes ago for a community north of St. Petersburg here up in Pasco County. So the people are a lot more serious now than they once were.
And journalism, you're saying, is too?
I think it is. I didn't see anybody here doing anything that I would consider to be dumb or even dramatic. There was a good bit of reporting outside, but all of it was from people who I know, who are highly experienced, people who are being quite careful. Some of these people have covered many, many hurricanes, and they don't do dumb things, and they have an obligation not to. They have an obligation not to go out there and do dumb things and get injured, because somebody will have to go rescue them and put themselves in peril, too. So they have a strong obligation not to be in a place where they themselves could be injured. But they also have an obligation to tell us what they can tell us and to give us as good information as they can so that we can get an idea as to how much damage is being done. We can get an idea as to what's going on with the property that I care about or the people that I care about.
Al Tompkins, thanks very much, and good luck with your house.
You bet. Hey, everything's looking good here. We actually saw some blue in the sky a minute ago.
Al Tompkins, broadcast online group leader at the Poynter Institute. He joined us on the phone from St. Petersburg, Florida. Let's see if we can squeeze in one more story. Kate in Melrose, Florida. We have 40 seconds for you, Kate.
Okay. Well, up here in north central Florida, I'm actually about 30 miles out of town in the country. And I just feel very fortunate, you know. I mean, there's trees down on my property. I don't have electricity. But, you know, I'm not hurt. As far as I know, nobody around me is. And we're alive and well. And so if I'm out of electricity for a few days and I've got my bathtubs filled up with water and I'm cooking on my camp stove, I feel very grateful.
Kate, thanks very much. And we hope, like you, others are managing to ride this thing out. Kate joining us on the line from Melrose in Florida. In the meantime, there'll be much more coverage of Hurricane Frances later today on NPR News, so stay with us for that. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.